Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Central Asia Metals Interim Results Call. My name is Dave, and I'll be your coordinator for today's conference. For the duration of the call, your lines will be on listen only. However, at the end of the presentation, there'll be an opportunity to ask questions. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad, and you'll be connected to an operator. I'm now handing you over to the CAML team to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Lovely. Thank you very much indeed. And those in the room, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this presentation of our interim results and acquisition of Lynx Resources. And welcome to those on the phone as well. Please do let me know if on the phone you cannot hear clearly, but I will be running through the slides on a screen in the room. I will assume that most people on the phone will be following the presentation that was lodged on the website, our CAML website, earlier today. For those of you who are not familiar with the CAML story, we've been operating in Kazakhstan for some 5 years, a copper SXEW project at Kounrad, and it's been churning off cash, and we've been paying a dividend for the last 5 years since we started production. So the first part of my presentation is about the interim results from the Kazakhstan operation, and also the announcement of our dividend for the first half of this year, which is 6.5p. Those who have been following our stock will know that we have been paying class-leading dividends, and this dividend here is an 18% uplift on the previous period last year. So in short, though, because I do want to get on to the acquisition, in the first half of the year, we produced 7,000 tons of cathode copper from our Kounrad project. The cash cost was 45 cents per pound, which is in the lowest quartile of cash costs worldwide. And our EBITDA has gone up 25% to up $6.5 million to $24 million. And this has allowed us to pay 6.5p dividend. And that actually reflects a 25% of our gross revenue for the first half of the year. Some of you, some of the analysts have been following the story will know that we've moved copper production from the west. We started leaching on the western dumps, and we started that in April of this year. And to date, to the end of June, we've recovered over 1,300 tons. So any concerns that people had that we wouldn't be able to follow the recovery that we were enjoying and from the eastern dumps, I think we've got a lot of comfort now that the West is performing much in line with our expectations. But just to remind everybody before we go on to the main part, we've produced from this project in Kazakhstan 61,350 tons of cathode copper. And that generated a gross revenue just short of $380 million. Of that, we paid back $105 million to shareholders through dividends and special buybacks. We paid $90 million in tax to the state. Our EBITDA average margin has been just shy of 60% since that time. And, of course, what this has led us to do is, A, pay a dividend, and, B, have a good, strong stock price, which has allowed us to go and look for other opportunities. Kazakhstan, we are fully invested now at Kounrad. The total capex spend has been $72 million or thereabouts, so we have no more major capital programs to run on the project. Sustaining capex going forward, $1 to $2 million per year, and a life out to 2031, 2032. So that is Kounrad. It's set fair, it's fully invested, and it will continue to pay out a dividend and make a good margin for us. We do have an exploration program in country, Shuak. We've done already about 21,000 meters of drilling in various forms. We haven't got any results from that yet, but I suspect in a short term we will be able to issue a press release giving an update on where those results are coming out. Of course, the main reason for this morning's presentation is the acquisition of Lynx Resources, and I'm pleased to say we've got the Chief Executive and CFO from Lynx here to just check that I don't tell any porkies. Thank you for coming. Just quickly, that's the financial performance of the CAML to date, and you'll see the production at 61. interestingly, look what we received in the copper price in the first half of the year, $5,600. This is what we received in the first year of production, nearly $8,000 per tonne. We've seen some pretty low periods. Last year, we received under an average of under $5,000. But every year, we paid back a dividend. And so you can see that we've increased our dividend payment year on year. Even in the dark days of 2014-15, when many of the major companies were cutting dividends or even postponing them entirely, we still managed to maintain strong dividend cash flow. So that is Kounrad. It will continue to operate for many years. What about the future for CAML? Well, we've agreed to acquire Lynx Resources for a sum of $402.5 million. Lynx is an underground, owns the Sasa mine, which is an underground lead and zinc mine in Macedonia. On an annual basis, it produces around about 23,000 tons of zinc in concentrate and about 29,000 tons of lead in concentrate. It's a long-life asset. It's got a 20-plus-year mine life. Importantly for us, where does it sit on the C1 cash cost curve? This is what our business is about, is running enterprises, running operations on a low point on the cash cost curve, which enhances our EBITDA margins and allows us to pay the dividends we've been paying our shareholders to date. So it matches long life at low cash cost. And, of course, it's got upside potential, this mine, in brownfield exploration areas and in the immediate vicinity. So it's something that we believe that we're going to be involved in for many years to come. But why lead zinc? Well, obviously, CAML has been a single country, single operation, single commodity company. This gives us exposure across the base metal range. You all know that lead and zinc, I hope, are seeing a resurgence. There's structural deficits in the lead and zinc supply that is driving the price up. So we're seeing increasing attention being put into lead and zinc suppliers. This gives us now a platform across the base metal range, and investors in London, in our company and AIM, can get exposure to lead and zinc operations. There's very, very few players such as us at our size that will give you this exposure to these base metals. Obviously, it spreads our risk. We've now gone from an in-situ heap leach operation, SXEW, to an underground operation with traditional crush, mill, and flotation. But these are just variations on a theme. Mining is mining. It's all about trying to make a profit and return and make returns to shareholders. But obviously, it also gives us country diversification. Macedonia is a recently independent country, but it's much the same as Kazakhstan. Since 1991, they've both been independent countries and have generated a lot of attention from foreign companies for foreign direct investment into the country. And I'm hoping that the government, I just talked to this morning, and we understand the government is not unaware that we're taking this asset on in Macedonia, and they said, great, it enhances their reputation for FDI. And we're looking to have meetings very soon with them. It maintains a strong balance sheet, but importantly, what this asset does is takes our current 14,000 tons of copper production per annum up to another level. And on a copper equivalent basis, it takes us to about 35,000 tons of copper equivalent. So it takes us into that next level where we've been looking to get to. The asset is a low-cost producer, 39 cents per pound zinc. The spot price of zinc is about $1.40. So there's a good margin there on the zinc. There's 23 million tons of resource there. I'll come more into that in a bit. And the first half of this year, their EBITDA margin was 61%, very much in line with what CAML enjoyed in the first half of this year as well at our Kounrad project. So as I said, Macedonia, for those who don't know where Macedonia is, it's bordered to the south by Greece, Bulgaria, Albania, Kosovo, and just to the north of it, Serbia. It is in close proximity to the major smelter where the lead and zinc concentrate primarily is sent to. It's a short trucking distance away. Passage across the border is relatively seamless. The country is a member of the UN. It's looking to become an accession state in Europe. and the joke I've been making as we exit, no doubt Macedonia will come in via the back door, I suspect. It's only a country of about 2 million people. New government, they're looking to encourage FDI into the country. The mine itself is situated closer to the Bulgarian border. Annually, it produces around about 780,000 tonnes from underground. And this graph at the bottom shows, this line here is the annual output from underground. And you can see over the last 8 years how consistent that's been. And that's the strength of the operation, we believe. The first half of the year, almost exactly 50% of their coal, 390,000 tonnes. And in terms of the zinc and the lead production, exactly 50% of the expected output for this coming year. Recoveries into concentrate are very much industry standard. There may be a potential to increase recovery in the zinc by the addition of a new mill, but that will be something we'll be looking at in the very near future to implement. Payability of the metals in the concentrate is in line with industry standard. But importantly, I think we've got this potential to increase throughput. This steady state output from underground doesn't necessarily complement the capacity of the plant. The plant has a capacity of about 850,000 tonnes, and we see possibly an easy win with little extra effort to increase this output from underground. And I've already spoken to the general manager about this and how we can get the workforce and get the underground operations to increase that from 780 steady to 800, 850. And I think that in the next year, 6 months to a year, is what we definitely will be looking at. As to the cash costs, as I say, it's at the lowest second quartile of cash costs. It's about the 26th, 27th percentile. On next year's expected output, we would expect this number to come down just to about the lowest quartile. So it matches where we want to be. What about the mine itself? Okay, well, it uses a sub-level caving methodology. But importantly for us, it's fully developed. I mean, there is still development to do to access the ore at certain levels. But in essence, all the main drives in from the side of the hillside, the adits, the minimum material access, declines down through into the ore body. And the main mining area is this area here, Savinja Reka, which has about 11 million tons of reserve. These reserves are signed off by SRK. So this reserve content here is sufficient for life at the current rate to about 2031. Additional material, inferred material down here, is to be found in this region here, Golema Reka. Now, development is already in place. There's a shaft there. It's operational currently, and there's main drives in. So there isn't a major capital program to open up these new areas. So in terms of what is in the ground is a fully developed, fully accessed mine, which we're going to obviously take advantage of. Sustaining capex going forward is pretty light for an underground mine, $8 to $9 million capital development, equipment replacement, and the like, but nothing too lumpy. In terms of the resources and reserves, you can see here the 24 million tons of resources, which does include the 10.9 million tons of reserves. So that'll take us out to 2038. And in the area between the two, I can never pronounce this area. What's it called? Nozireka. This area here, there is indications of, you know, the ore body being there. There is drilling currently going on. And so that is a potential additional source of material. So that's the mine. There's 680 odd members of staff on site. Senior management is experienced. There's two expatriates who live in the area, who manage the mine. And I think one of the most important things is that the health and safety. This year there's been no lost time injury accidents, which is a testament to the new management in driving down what was an unacceptable level of injuries on the mine. This year, since the beginning of the year, no accidents whatsoever. And I think that's been helped by the appointment of a general manager, an Australian, with a lot of experience in this region. He speaks in Russian, and he lives in the area. And so now he's putting a lot of attention and time into that aspect of the business. Obviously, there'll be maybe questions from the floor at a later stage. But at this point, I'd like to hand you over to Gavin, who will take you through the the funding summary.
Thanks very much, Nick. Right, well, Nick's pressed the button, you don't need that. The table on the right-hand side sort of illustrates how we're going to pay for this asset. The amount of $402.5 million was actually agreed back in July, so it's interesting to note that the zinc price has rallied about 15% since then. And we're going to pay it via three methods. So we look at the $273.5 million on day one will be funded by a new debt facility, which we've raised against the Kounrad asset, and that is via our offtake counterparty, Traxys. It comes at pretty attractive rates of LIBOR plus 4.75%, and it amortizes fully over 5 years. And then we've got an underwritten placing via an accelerated book build, which launched this morning. And I can see in the audience that the representatives from JP Morgan and Peel Hunt are looking pretty relaxed about that one, and that's $153.5 million. The third component is consideration shares, which we're issuing to the vendors, Orion Resource Finance. They are a very well-known private equity firm in the mining industry, about $3.2 billion under management, and extremely experienced in the sector. And with the endorsement of the combined entity, we believe that they are willing to take part in the upside of this exciting venture. Orion is actually locked up for 6 months post the transaction, and then the 6 months following that are subject to an orderly market method of disposing of their shares. There is an existing debt facility at the Cypher mine. It's effectively a project finance facility. We chose to leave this in place because it was a very attractive facility in terms of pricing, LIBOR plus 5%, and has about 5.5 years left remaining on that. So this is the first time CAML's taken any debt onto its balance sheet. We've always run net cash. And we've always been wary of deleveraging profiles whenever we've looked at debt, and we believe that the 1.66 times, the 1.63 times net debt EBITDA that's up on the screen is well within sort of industry norms, and it's well within the covenant level set by the debt providers. And we'd look to deleverage that via the strong cash flows of the company pretty aggressively, and to the extent that we'd probably pay off that debt well within the final maturity dates there. There is an element of deferred consideration, which we'll be paying to the vendors. That kicks in after 12 months and is payable monthly for the 6 months after that. And that is not conditional on any events occurring. So it's a simple cash payment to the vendors at that point. One thing to note is that our major shareholder, Kenneth Rakashev, who's been a very supportive shareholder and was originally the owner of 40% of our Kazakh asset, Kounrad, has taken the opportunity to sell half of his stake into the placing. This is the first liquidity event we've really had for a stakeholder that large over a number of years. So he is using the funds to effectively fund other assets that he has within Kazakhstan. So he'll stay on the board, and he's also subject to a lockup with a remaining stake of 90 days. So the whole sort of ethos behind putting this combination of debt and equity and the balance that we were trying to achieve was really twofold. It was mainly to provide accretion to our existing shareholders and then also provide significant upside to any new shareholders coming in. So we believe we've achieved that on the projections we've looked at. And as Nick mentioned earlier, this transaction is accretive on many metrics and partly because of the capital structure we've put in place here. So, on that note, I'll hand over to Nigel, who's going to talk you through more of the financials.
Thanks, Gavin. Morning, ladies and gentlemen. So what are we trying to create here at CAML? A diversified, low-cost base metals producer, as Nick's already mentioned. That's what we're trying to create through this transaction. Diversification, as you can see here from this chart here, what we're effectively doing through this transaction, in copper equivalent terms, is increasing the asset base of CAML from about 194,000 tonnes of copper equivalent recoverable copper up to almost 500,000 tonnes. And also, as you can see there, quite a good diversification of three different base metals, which reduces our risk effectively. So about 2.6 times increase in the asset base. That number's almost mirrored in terms of production output as well. As you know, our guidance this year is 13 to 14,000 tonnes of copper. With this on board, in a full year, we'll be looking for approximately 35,000 tonnes of copper equivalent output, again, across the three metals. Low-cost producer, that's always been our mantra, always has been at Kounrad. Combining the two businesses has a combined C1 cash cost, again, in copper equivalent terms, of just 74 cents per pound, which is still within the lowest quartile. So bigger business, still within the lowest quartile, still cash producing. And then when you look at the cost base and some of the financials, we've done a lot of work on the financial due diligence with the Lynx Resource Management team and with PwC, who've done the due diligence work on this. And what we've found that it is a sustainable low cost base. Electricity is cheap in the country. It's similar to what we experience in Kazakhstan at 4.5 cents per kilowatt hour. The labour force is well paid for the area, but internationally those salaries are fairly low at 6,000 euros per annum on an average basis. The mining cost, $17 per tonne of ore, is low cost. Flotation is $10 per tonne of ore. Throw in G&A with that and you've got a mine that produces zinc and lead at the levels we've talked about for $32 per tonne of ore prior to freighting it out to the smelters. The smelters themselves, most of the product goes to a smelter in Bulgaria, about 5 hours' drive away. Freight costs are quite cheap at $19 per wet metric ton. And also the treatment charges. I think the Lynx Resource Management team have done a really good job at competitive tendering on the treatment charges and have managed to reduce those charges, almost halve those charges in the time that they've had the asset, which has obviously got a massive benefit to the bottom line in terms of EBITDA. And what you can see that the current team have done is improve the EBITDA margin closer to what we experience at Kounrad. Granted, some of that is based on an increase in the metal price, but I think this cost base is sustainable moving forward, and we believe that we can combine two low-cost assets to give a far broader base and therefore good future for asset combination for the future of CAML. Diversified low-cost base metals producer, as you said. What are the key assets on this transaction? High-quality assets, low-cost, long-life, high-quality products coming out of the assets, both in terms of the concentrate product itself. That's what they call a dilution concentrate, so it's easy to blend with other concentrate products that have more deleterious products in it. So it is a good product itself to actually sell from the mine. There's an experienced management team in place. The Fusion Capital Management guys have actually put in place a really good management team on site, similar to what we have at Kounrad, so that's a good combination there. Diversification we've already mentioned. Gavin's mentioned how we're going to finance this, and we're very cautious throughout that process to make sure that we don't take on too much debt. We've never had any debt in the books at CAML, as most people know, and in taking on the debt that we are taking on to acquire this asset, we believe both the gearing ratios and the net debt to EBITDA are certainly sustainable and manageable with the EBITDAs that we're going to throw off from the business. And also transaction benefits. We're a bigger business now. Potential, if you like, objectives potentially to go and go onto the main market, but that's something for the future. But it is a broader business and a less risky business. Delivering shareholder value. Obviously, Nick's mentioned our dividends that we've paid back to shareholders since we've been a single asset entity. $105 million since we started paying a dividend back in 2012. If you look at the chart here just on the right-hand side, keep doing that. Total shareholder return on a compound basis since we started our dividend policy, 20.6% compared to some of our peers who are either break-even or in the negative sphere. So that's a really healthy message. And we intend to continue that message with the acquisition of Lynx Resources. And the one key message on our dividend policy, which has always been on a revenue basis, we've looked at this, we've reviewed it, and in taking on both debt and becoming a more mature business, a bigger business, we feel we have to refine that policy just slightly. And what we're proposing is that from next year, a full year of the combined business, our dividend policy will be to return to shareholders a target range of between 30 to 50% of the free cash flow, which will be the cash flow basically generated from our operating activities less the capital expenditure. You've already heard me talk about a low cost base and good strong EBITDA margins. Low sustaining capex for both assets moving forward means that we'll have a significant pool of cash to actually both pay down the dividend quite quickly and pay healthy dividends back to our shareholders and maintain the CAML brand in the market of giving good money back off low cost assets and also diversifying risk. On that note on the finances, I'll just hand back to Nick just to summarise and mention some points on timing.
Thank you, Nigel. Just to summarise then, the acquisition on all levels, as you can see, in terms of diversification, of commodity, of country risk, and strengthening of our balance sheet in terms of a low-cost blended operations going forward are all good reasons why this deal makes absolute sense for CAML. Not least because it makes us in, takes us into the next stage of an operating company. We intend to maintain that class-leading dividend payout to shareholders. I think that will set us apart. Shareholders will be able to get access to copper, lead, zinc. Lead and zinc, you know, we can have a discussion about that offline, but I think most commentators would acknowledge that the lead and zinc commodities are due for a good run. And certainly in the for medium term, we're seeing very strong figures coming out in terms of structural deficit in supply, increasing demand, which will keep the price buoyant. But we haven't been too optimistic in our projections looking forward, and we have obviously used a consensus pricing in our modelling to make sure that we're not overstretching ourselves. So this is a good deal, we feel, and shareholders have shown their support by the marketing we've done this last week in looking to raise the equity portion of the transaction costs. But let's just remind ourselves, in 2016 figures would have been 14,000 tons of copper if we were a pro forma company, 23,000 tons of zinc and 29,000 tons of lead. I mean, obviously H1 numbers here, you just got to double those numbers up to see where we would be on a pro forma basis for 2017. Patently, this acquisition will not complete absolutely at the half-year mark. It'll complete in the next 4 or 5 weeks or so, mid-October we would hope, but certainly full year 2018 we'll see absolutely these sort of numbers being generated, and obviously the EBITDA margins we would hope that we've shown you here today. Now, just to be clear on the timing, the book build is going on as we speak. I would hope that by early afternoon that we should have closed off the book at a very acceptable price. We'll be publishing the admission document on Monday, which will be the full document with all the competent persons reports and the like on them. And then we will have our EGM on Wednesday, the 11th of October, at which the approval will be sought from shareholders, money drawn down, and we would then look to complete the acquisition mid-October or thereabouts, subject to this EGM. That's it. We've kept the presentation short. I'm sure there'll be a few questions from the floor and from the telephone. So I would like to now ask for questions. So we'll take questions from the floor first, and then we'll go and take questions from the phone, shall we?
Yeah.
Can we just...
Hi, Yannis Masoudas from RBC. Just three questions from my side. First of all, on the SASA project, can you talk about the free cash flow in the most recent period? Because you talk about the EBITDA margin, which is very strong, but just an idea on free cash flow would be useful. Second point on the gearing, in terms of net debt to EBITDA, what's the plan there? What's the target? Do you want to get the balance sheet back to a net cash position by free cash flow generation, or are you happy to maintain some leverage going forward? And then the last point on commodity exposure. It looks like the big focus is on Tier 1 assets with low cost positioning in the cost curve. Isn't that more important than the positioning of around base metals or bulk commodities? Or would you basically consider anything outside base metals if it's the right sort of asset in the right part of the cost curve?
Can I ask you, I'll answer the last question first, if I may. We're pretty agnostic as to what we go into. Gavin joined us 3 years ago looking at projects, and we looked at many, many projects around the world and whether they fitted what we wanted, which was generally, it's got to be EBITDA accretive on so many levels, on free cash flow and a number of other metrics. Obviously, it's got to be affordable, and you can see that we've structured this, I think, quite well to make sure that we're not too over-leveraged on the balance sheet, but the debt is about the right size, the equity is about the right size, and so therefore the uptick for existing shareholders is good. There's not too much dilution on equity. The selling shareholder has got some equity, some stake in the game, so they're interested in supporting us going forward. So I think the balance of that structure is right. I'll let Gavin come on to the leverage of on the debt in a minute. And in terms of free cash flow...
Yeah, in terms of the cash flow, obviously I can't give any forward projections, but the one thing I would say, you saw that there's healthy H1 2017, healthy margins at 61%. All the work we've done is it's a low cost base, there's low capex moving forward, it's a low taxation regime, it's 10% corporation tax. All the modelling we've done and the working capital models we've done with PwC for the short term and the longer term in terms of the business sustainability indicate that there's strong cash flow returns because of those factors effectively. Now clearly one big driver on that is the metal prices, and we can't influence the metal prices, but the knowledge we have of the metal prices moving forward is certainly in the short to medium term they're supported by the structural deficit in the market, and we believe they'll maintain a fairly good level. Clearly if metal prices come back down to some of the lower historical numbers we've seen, say $1 per pound for zinc, 90 cents per pound for lead, you're going to go down to lower EBITDA margins. But I mean historically the mine has enjoyed margins of around 40% anyway. So at that stage we would plan in some ways that we'd have delevered the balance sheet anyway, because we're not a racy company that wants to take a lot of debt on for more acquisitions. Our focus for the next 6 to 12 months will be very much to bed this asset down into the CAML group, lever down the debt effectively. Whether we go to another position where we've no debt and we're just a cash, you know, a net cash position, that depends on future opportunities in maybe 2 years' time. But the term loans are, what, 5 years, and we would hope that we've paid those down within that five-year period from the cash flow from the operations.
I don't think I need to add, really. I think the only thing I would say, Yanis, is that, you know, for us, the bulks are difficult because I think they're such high capex and projects that it's not something we necessarily look at as a priority. You know, I think the balance sheet that we've got would only support sort of smaller projects in those commodities, which are not, you know, probably as cash generative as we like.
Yeah, I think, you know, the tier one are big expensive animals. I don't think we necessarily are the right size yet, but I think this sort of growth that we've got a bit of organic potential in Shuak in Kazakhstan, that may or may not turn into something in the years to come. But this bolt-on here is the right size. It's the right sort of operating margins that will allow us to expand, delever on the debt side fairly rapidly, and then we can start to look from a bigger base as a bigger company with more shareholders, more liquidity, and it's easier to raise debt will allow us to possibly go to the next stage. But let's learn to walk with these two first before we start to sort of look too far into the future. But it's certainly not we haven't ignored that factor that, you know, there are other opportunities bound to come our way now, I think. Any more questions?
Pete Manager from Phil Hunt. I was just wondering, you mentioned there's potential to improve the capacity or the volumes of ore going through the plants a little bit. Is there similar potential to improve recoveries and so forth that either you've identified or the existing team has identified that could further improve either metal volumes and or reduce costs?
Yes. I mean, I think in terms of I'm just, for the sake of those on the phone, I'm just going back to slide six. Currently, in terms of recoveries, metallurgical recoveries, I think recovery from the plant is at 84-85% of the zinc. There is test work that's been done that indicates that a finer grind will possibly increase zinc recoveries by 2%, and I think there is a plan afoot to actually install a new regrind mill, and that's ongoing, and that should be in place in this fourth quarter. We'll see what those recoveries are. We haven't modelled that because our view was that maybe the test work was not sufficient to model it, but certainly it is an expectation that we would get some wins on the zinc recovery there. As to the underground, the plant does have the capacity. The crushing plant has about 1 million ton a year capacity. I think the milling is possibly the bottleneck to going above 850,000 tons, but certainly from underground. I'm a mining engineer, and I know that, you know, we've got the plant. We've got good mobile plant. It's Atlas Copco. It's not. It is well maintained. There's a contract to maintain the plant with Atlas Copco itself. So they keep on site consignment stock, their own engineers or trained engineers. So the plant is in good condition. Some of it has got 25, 30,000 hours or more, where in many places I've seen them being scrapped at that age. Some of these plant I've seen is in extremely good nick. If it's well maintained, it will last a long time. So we've got the equipment, we've got the working faces. In each mining horizon, we've got something of the order in this area of about 20 points at which we can extract ore. That's both in driving and in sloping for the back in the sub-level. So there's enough faces to go to. I think it is not unreasonable to expect that an increase in output from underground to, say, the 850 level should be, and I'm not promising this, an achievable target for next year. It certainly is something that this year, I think, they tell me they're working towards 800,000 tons. We'll see if they achieve that. Obviously, we won't influence that much because we're only coming in towards very much the late to the day, but it's certainly something we would hope to achieve. And then going forward, there have been studies about bringing in this inferred material, which is down at Golema Reka, actually mine it earlier. But that's a study to be had.
Martin Potts from FinCap, just a quick one from me. Are there any offtake contracts associated with this?
Martin, thank you. Gavin.
Yeah, hey, Martin. Currently, the material is sold via a Orion-owned entity called Lynx Metals. Post the transaction, that'll fall away, and we will be contracted sort of directly or effectively through another vehicle into the two smelters that are taking the material. Those contracts run off at the end of the year, but we'll be working, well, depending on timing, we'll either be working with the Lynx team to put new contracts in place for the next year, or with our current offtake counterparties, Traxys, to do that. So,
yeah. But ultimately, we'll be, from next year, be within our control.
I think just one point I'd make on that, Martin, is that one of the improvements we've seen in the change of the previous change in ownership was a huge a reduction in TCs to get them more in line with sort of market, and I think some competitive tension was created within the region, but certainly with Lachine going offline, and that was the sort of one of the cleaner concentrates around. So this concentrate is in demand now, and I think we'll continue to get really good terms on that on the TCs on that.
Any more questions from the room? Nope. Looks like we've
questions on the phone.
Have we got any questions on the phone?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad and I'll open up your line. Thank you. So if you have a question, please press star 1.
Yeah, we have an answer. No, not often.
We have no questions so far.
Thank you very much.
Okay. On that basis, I think I'll call the presentation to an end. Can I thank everybody for coming in the room? And on the phone, thank those who phoned in. No doubt some of you will send us emails or calls. Nigel, Gavin and myself, Louise, we're all willing to answer any questions you might have. If you've got questions, please, Louise Rattle, she looks after our investor relations in the company and she will deal with and allocate questions and queries to whoever is appropriate. Thank you all very much for attending. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining today's conference. You may now replace your handsets.